I'll run through my spiel here. So thank you all for joining us today, and I want to give a big thank you to Lou Stocco and Sam Immordino, who agreed to be interviewed. So Sam is Director Construction Software and Services, and Lou is Director Manufacturing Advanced Analytics at USG. And I'm Lee Green, and I run IRI's Research and Strategic Initiatives. So this interview is an element of IRI's digitalization community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. And through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. We'll have one on upskilling at DuPont coming out in a matter of days. I'm so excited. We also do facilitate roundtable discussions on key topics. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about ChatGPT, because what else? We got to do it. And we do updates with insights and additional resources and webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the third Thursday of the month at noon Eastern. And next month, we'll be talking to Pete Weddington of Owens Corning about collaboration hubs. And if you're not already on the mailing list for these, I will sign you up after the call. And if you don't want to be signed up for this stuff, just let me know. I don't want to send emails to people who don't want them. So just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Sam and Lou. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can either raise your hand using that function on the Teams there, and I'll unmute you so you can ask your question, we can have a conversation, or you can type your question into the chat and I'll read it out for you. All right, all the boring stuff out of the way. Let's go ahead and get started. So I'm going to ask each of you, so can you tell us a bit about your background and about USG? And let's start with you, Lou.
Sure. So, again, Lou Stocco, nice to see everybody today. Hopefully we can have some good conversation at the end. So been part of USG for 29 years. USG is a building products manufacturer, been in business since 1902. We have a history of innovation. We're the innovators of sheetrock, Duroc brand products, also some ceiling tile and some shaft wall liner for elevators. So part of safety. We have 50 manufacturing facilities in North America. We're kind of built around our gypsum business, our ceilings business, our some of our performance materials products, and our services business is pretty much how we're set. I've been with company 29 years, spent the first half of it in manufacturing and operations management, engineering, and then for the last half of the year, have been focused on kind of the technology and engineering aspects of it. Currently, I'm leading the digital transformation, the automation kind of strategy and roadmap implementation. And then I'll turn it over to you, Sam.
Oh, thanks, Lou. So, hi, everyone. My name is Sam Immordino, and I've been with USG for 31 years. It'll be coming up on 32 years pretty soon. Most of that time was with USG's R&D facility, which is located out in Libertyville, Illinois. And I did product development in most of the new product development in most of the USG's laboratories out there. And I think around, 2021, the leadership team asked if we would, if I would be interested in helping put together a customer facing digital innovation group. We had a number of different digital initiatives related to the customer going on in IT and marketing and IR and R&D. And there was a desire to bring that all together under one central team and put a strategy together around making it easier for the customer to basically interact and choose and use USG's products. And so that's where we're at today.
Awesome. Thanks, Sam. So we're going to stick with you. So can you share USG's overall digitalization strategy and what you're focused on right now?
Sure. So a few years back, USG, Lou had made this point, with historically being a construction products company and an innovator in physical construction products, realized the importance of digitization and digital transformation for the company. And we put together an overall sort of digital transformation plan that had five parts to it. The first one was we're very focused in digital internally in our manufacturing, and Lou is leading that area. The second one was very much focused outward and the customer. That's the area that I'm leading. The third area is referred to as smart products. So we're looking at ways to use digital technologies in order to enhance our physical products. So you could think of that like sensors and things like that that we could put into our products. That's mostly the realm of R&D. The fourth area is digital transformation in terms of new business model and new business services. And then lastly is IT infrastructure. So looking at all of the required IT support that would be needed for the prior four areas.
Okay. So switching over to you, Lou. So What sort of road mapping are you doing? There's a lot going on there. So how are you doing this for USG's manufacturing evolution, and what are your current goals?
Right. I'm glad you said evolution, because one of the things that comes up is this an initiative? And we specifically chose evolution for the reason that this is evolving with time, and it's not an initiative. And part of what we do with our road mapping, it first starts with the kind of the strategy. So what is it that we're trying to accomplish, and how does this align with our overall business objectives? And so everything that we do is tied around being the lowest delivered cost manufacturer in the product spaces that we provide, and then also the easiest to do business with. And so Sam is kind of heading that customer facing side of it. And then we have a team focused on what we're calling within the four walls and adjacent to the four walls. So it first starts with that. And then we actually went through and did quite a bit of development of how are we going to be the lowest delivered cost producer, leveraging these technologies when and where appropriate, but also the methodologies of the technology, because most of this is not really technology focused as much as it is human focused. Our ability for our operators and our management at the plants to be able to leverage these tool sets to get better, right? To help us with our overall equipment efficiency improvement, you know, targeting on utilizing our most cost efficient raw materials. We actually started with kind of what are we doing today? and where can we leverage off of what's already been done? As opposed to always thinking, let's start with something new. And so that was always great, because you got an idea to see if all the great work, we're an innovative company, all the great work people are already working on, but don't necessarily know what other people are working on. So it kind of helped bring that in focus. And then once we kind of establish that, then it's what are the targets? What's our end game that we're trying to get to? All the things that we're trying to accomplish. And then it's a matter of then prioritization and working with the business. And this is actually probably one of the most important parts, is so you don't have initiative overload. How does this overlay with some of the other strategies that we have going on with the business, because you have a limited amount of resourcing and a limited amount of money to do it. And so when we went forward on this, we actually did not ask for a specific budget for what we're doing, because what we wanted is we actually wanted to facilitate that prioritization and to make sure that we are solving the business needs and the problems, leveraging the technologies within digital and automation. And to do that, if you're doing it, then if the business is trying to spend your money on this or something else at one of the plants, you're definitely making sure that you're focusing your efforts on what's actually important to your business. And again, goes back to that, what is it you're trying to accomplish overall?
Okay. So, Sam, can you tell us about kind of your side of things, you know, in this whole strategy, about your work at the Digital Center of Excellence and what you're doing there?
Sure, absolutely. There is a lot of overlap in how we approached it with what Lou said. One of the things that we did right off the bat is we already had a lot of history and process around physical innovation coming out of the R&D center. So we took sort of our development process methodology from there and then adapted it for the digital world. And one of our big focuses that came out of R&D is making sure that when we were digitally innovating, that we were working on things that were very much aligned with the business. The overall strategy for the digital team being market facing is looking at developing specific digital technologies that make it very easy for the customer to learn about our products, choose our products, purchase our products, and use our products. I like to say sort of choose and use to make it real simple. And so what we did was is we started off we did customer journey mapping and voice of customer research from end to end in terms of USG's products. And so our products stay the same across the journey, but what does happen is our customers actually change. And so we start off in the architectural design world where buildings are being modeled. And then it kind of moves over to the owner and distributor and contractor world that has distinctly different needs in terms of choosing and using our products. And then ultimately, you know, occupying the space itself and facilities. And so our thinking with the Digital Center of Excellence was to be very focused on using certain technologies such as AI and 360 sort of immersive experiences. Other technologies we were very focused on is called BIM or Building Information Modeling. And this is all about creating sort of digital twins of your physical products in the digital space so that our customers can drop them into their 3D models. And there's a whole host of benefits there. So we started off looking at opportunities at with the customer, looking at specific pain points that we could solve using these leading edge technologies in order to make it easier for them to choose and use the products. And when I say make it easier, it's about making it easier in terms of time savings, making it easier in terms of efficiencies and costs. And making it easier to help with the handoff from, for example, the architect going to the owner and then eventually going down to the contractor. And one of the things I mentioned earlier in our strategy is that we had this fifth pillar of IT infrastructure. And so we sort of have a line of demarcation between what the digital innovation and the center of excellence team does and what IT does. And so if it is something that is technology itself, that's not the digital innovation team's domain. We are looking at sort of unique technologies that solve specific pain points that will allow sort of USG to differentiate itself from its competitors and in the eyes of the customer.
Okay. So you already touched on this a little bit, Lou, but I want to go deeper into the people side of things. So how are you handling all of that? And I'm going to ask both of you.
Yeah,
but we're going to start with Lou, and especially with regard to training and maintaining institutional knowledge. I know that's a big pain point for everybody. So, all right, Lou, you first.
Absolutely. You know, there's a lot to that and a lot to unpack there. So, you know, manufacturing in general is we're having an issue with scarcity of labor availability, also with turnover and also with tenure reduction over time. So as you're getting this turnover rate, your tenure is going down. And so one of the most critical aspects of kind of your digital road mapping is providing kind of the information and the training and the structure and the infrastructure to kind of build up that, in essence, that loss and experience. And so, you know, we're moving forward with what's kind of we're kind of calling the connected workforce, and that's really focused on providing the information, the tools, the data, and also the connectivity to subject matter experts in order to help minimize upset conditions and also optimize operations. And part of that is mobility. So we have our, let's say on the floor, let's just start with the floor. You have an operator. We're a continuous process manufacturer. So an operator will actually be in charge of a large area of process equipment. They're not beholden to just one specific location. You know, historically you might have an HMI in just one location. Now we actually have mobility. So we've actually turned those HMIs into a mobile tablet type platform so that as the operator is somewhere else, they can still have access to be able to operate, control, and troubleshoot the machinery. But then things such as cameras, we might have cameras in the area, but now we've actually, those cameras are available to that operator wherever they are within the facility. So again, if they're on a, let's say the third floor and they have, let's say an alarm saying something's going on the second floor, they can really quickly look at the, at those aspects. Another area that we're doing, as far as kind of the training aspect is we're moving into, more of a video type, application where, you know, historically you might have a standard operating procedure on a piece of paper and then maybe you move to a visual work instruction, which is a great step in standard operating procedures. But the way, you know, new operators and stuff are coming on, it's really video driven. So we've been gravitating towards developing, videos on how to operate this piece of equipment, how to troubleshoot this piece of equipment. And then we're leveraging both the resources at the plant, but also our subject matter experts, like our technologists that visit all the plants and are accountable for all the plants. They're accountable for establishing those videos for the plants to use and then tying them to those tablets so that they can have access to it, or it could be a general foreman or even a production manager in their office having access and that secure connectivity to information. And then another area that we're working on as well is leveraging the technologies and the digitals to go to what I'm calling hands off, eyes off, but minds on manufacturing approach. And what we mean by that is leveraging automation so that you're eliminating your dull, dangerous, dirty type activities. Eyes off. So instead of having to actually observe the equipment continuously to try and identify upset conditions, leveraging things such as anomaly detection or machine vision so that you're actually using those to identify issues and then directing the operator or mechanic or whatever on where they should actually focus their time at. So it's trying to elevate instead of trying to do everything is to be able to direct and focus on specific areas. And then the other part that we're really leveraging is we've got great subject matter experts, that are providing service to these 50 operations. And by leveraging things such as anomaly detection and some other things, then there's actually physical touch points with the operations. So it's, you know, here's some things that are starting to trend in the wrong direction. Here's the priority. Is this a priority within within your current operation? And then here's the touch points. Here's actually subject matter experts, either myself or some others to come in. So it's really a connectivity, approach in bringing those resources because you don't have, you know, back in the old days of, you know, I'm going to shadow train you for the next 3 months. Those are unfortunately behind us. And so, you know, we've been establishing and coming up with these methodologies to overcome that and leverage those. So you're building up the skill sets at the plants. And also almost like you have this kind of virtual connectivity and leveraging the whole organization instead of relying on just the plant and the resourcing themselves.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. So, Sam, what's been your approach on your side?
So On the sort of customer facing side, we started seeing some things back in R&D about 3 years ago, following along what Lou said in terms of the loss of institutional knowledge and the retirement of subject matter experts. And We also observed that not only was that occurring with expertise in R&D, but it was happening in our sales teams. It was happening with our customer service teams, and even sort of our a lot of institutional knowledge around product management. And our ability to answer customers' questions, which can get very complex and technical when you're in the built space, we were taking a significant amount of time. And so one of the things that we started doing about 3 years ago is leveraging natural language processing to build an AI system. And what we did was we started to build an AI bot, a natural language processing bot, focused very much on gypsum technology. And we started.
Could you repeat that? I think you broke up just a little bit there. So focused on what kind of technology?
So we have different businesses with AI and natural language processing. Excuse me. You really don't want to teach or train the model on all of your knowledge, because then it'll respond more as on a general level. What you want to do is you want to teach the AI very focused in topical areas. So the first place we started to train an AI model was around our gypsum knowledge and our gypsum technology. And so we started doing that about 3 years ago, and we launched internally the first AI technical bot, we call it. And we launched it with our sales team early last year, and now we're training up another one on ceilings expertise. And what we want to do is make sure that the bot is correct, and so we're using it with our sales team in order to make sure that it's providing the right knowledge. So we're training it with sales interaction. And we're also looking at sort of measuring the time savings. So if you think about how long it would take a new salesperson or a new customer service rep to answer a technical question, it could be anywhere from, you know, a half an hour to a day or two. And so being able to have a single source of information that a new salesperson can go to and get an answer within a couple minutes or even a few seconds actually is a great way to show the value of this technology. And I think it's interesting that you're going to be talking about ChatGPT tomorrow, which is sort of the next evolution of what we're doing. The algorithm we're using is sort of the precursor to that. The ChatGPT uses a generative algorithm, which has the ability to bring different pieces of information together and interact on a more human-like way, which I think everybody is really excited about. So we're excited about that capability as well. But one of the things that we want to be cognizant about is ChatGPT is an open model. So everything you do becomes part of the training model. And I know that there's been some issues with companies. I think it was Samsung where they typed in some code, some proprietary code, and that then became part of the ChatGPT model. So we're looking at it from a perspective of we want to use that algorithm, but we want to train it internally and we want to have sort of control of that information so that we know that it's correct, that it's not providing inaccurate information or sharing information that we don't want it to. So that's where we're at today. It's a long-term sort of process to build these models out for the different topics and connect them. But we hope that over the long term, it'll help be able to answer questions quicker, which really builds loyalty and ups our customer service game over time.
That's awesome. So I'm going to do kind of a joint question. So I want to know how you guys are working together to do all of these strategic goals. There's so much going on. It's overwhelming. So Sam, I'm going to stick with you. Can you talk about how you've been working with Lou and his colleagues to tie it all together?
So it's a really good question. And I think you kind of touched on it. There's so much going on and both Lou and I are still early in this process. And so while, you know, and Lou will speak to what's going on his end, on my end, I think there's great potential as we develop applications for the customer to study the behavior and the data and even, you know, like the types of products that they're using or ordering, and then potentially connect that back to what Lou is doing, on his side between the four walls. So I think from my perspective, that's probably a future point that we want to get to. First, we need to build out the pipeline. And hit our metrics and sort of establish USG in the digital area in terms of customer facing, and then the data analytics in the back end and connecting to what Lou's team is doing. I think there'll probably be a lot of opportunity there.
All right, Lou, time to weigh in.
Yeah. So as Sam said, we are at the kind of the initial stages. We've been doing this for actually many years, but more focus in the last several. And one of the biggest areas that we're kind of working together is really in that shared service range, right? Our team leverages IT, Sam's team leverages IT, and it's important for us that, you know, what IT is building out for us is both buildable, scalable, agile, and flexible enough to meet his needs and my needs at the same time. And so there's actually quite a bit of communication that we have with some of those shared service type organizations. And then Sam and I just get caught up over coffee now again, just to see what's going on and what he's seeing in the technology realm and what I'm seeing in the technology realm. And, you know, when we go view things like this and other organizations, we kind of bring back to each other saying, hey, I noticed this, you know, have you heard about that yet? And so it's a way to really just kind of build upon that knowledge and shared knowledge of information that we have.
Okay. A lot of coffee, I bet.
A lot of coffee.
So I'm going to stick with Lou, but I'm going to ask both of you this. So everybody loves metrics, our favorite word. So, you know, how are you both determining the KPIs and metrics for all of this?
Yep, absolutely. So It kind of goes back to our business goals and objectives, and that's actually where the KPIs start from. So for us, the first one is the lowest delivered manufactured cost for our customers, and then easiest to do business. So from a manufacturing standpoint, are we providing the products that they need when and where they need it? And then from there, then we actually leverage our FP&A, financial planning and analysis group, at the very beginning of each and every project that we have, either whether it's a proof of concept or a validation, or actually when we get into replicating it across the whole network, because we start with the end in the beginning, and then we leverage our FP&A to establish how are we going to measure this so that we get the teams thinking through that measurement process along the way, because part of the things that we challenge the team is to, can we automate that measurement? Because the last thing you want to do is do a bunch of manual effort to try and do that. So we work very closely with FP&A. And then at the end of each one, whether it's a proof of concept, we go through a gate. So FP&A will then actually validate what were the benefits. So by bringing them on at the very beginning and then trying to automate through the implementation aspect, then that gives you the quick information on, do I move forward to, let's say, validation and the same thing. And you also have that independent touch point. So you don't have to worry about people's bias and trying to bias information. It's actually agreed upon way to measure. And then along the way, so I'll give you a couple examples. So for example, we use machine vision, and we use machine vision in a manner to oversee the actual physical operations. So could be the movement of panels through part of the process. And so part of what we do is we measure how many times that machine vision identified a condition, and then we tie it to our automation. So our PLC, we actually tie it to the PLCs and we will control it. And then, so we actually have a dashboard that shows on the floor and then here in the corporate office that we view, where we're actually seeing how many times have we actually taken action, and then how many times did the operator have to take action. And then we use that as then a method to then improve. And that helps us with our delay and other areas that are measurable as well. Another example is we use advanced analytics to do predictive critical to quality measurements. So we actually make a digital twin of our product. So we are predicting the quality characteristics of it. And then we actually use that prediction to optimize our formulations. So we actually have the most optimal formulations for the dynamic conditions that go on during operations. And so we use these KPI and metrics. So for example, we know what the most efficient production formulation is, and then we're actually tracking what's the actual production formulation is. And it's not meant to be a stick, right? It's not meant to pound over someone's head. It's more to identify areas of opportunity. And earlier we talked about that connectivity, both the data connectivity, but the most important part of connectivity in my mind is that human connection point. So if we see that maybe a plan is deviating from what is optimal, then there's the communication, and it's not, you know, hey, why aren't you doing it? It's more of, hey, we noticed that we're not at optimal. What's going on? Maybe there's a special cause deviation going on. And then that's where the communication comes in. So you can actually have the conversation. Oh, okay. So do you need any help with that? We can, you know, can we provide you the resources? Because the last thing we want is to, I love this picture. If you think of like a stagecoach, the last thing we want is to have too many people on the stagecoach instead of not having enough horses driving the stagecoach. And so what we're trying to do is actually provide the horses and the tools and the support for manufacturing colleagues to do what they try to do on an everyday basis to safely produce our products, meeting our customers' needs, and doing so at the most cost-efficient methodology.
Yeah, I like that visual. That always helps. So, Sam, what about your side? What are your metrics?
It's a really good question that actually took us a little while to figure out. And I say that because, you know, trying to drive customer loyalty and influence customers' decisions to sort of choose and use your products can get difficult when it comes to KPIs, because in some cases, you know, once the software is used, you sort of lose track of what happens after that, right? So we'll go back a little bit. So the things that we look at for our software and our tools and applications, we've taken an approach where we try to drive awareness through marketing, promotion, and advertising, sort of what we refer to as a digital go-to-market. We'll use various social online tools. We'll use paid search. We'll use online sort of documentaries and pieces that people can read in order to bring awareness to the software that we've developed. And so we'll look at metrics such as landing page visits. How many landing page visits do we get? We'll look at how long a customer spends on a given landing page. We'll look at how many downloads of our software have occurred. We'll look at then from downloads, we'll look at registrations. And of course, we've built a model that sort of gives us an understanding of what to expect. There's sort of a fall off. And then once we go from sort of downloads to registration, then we'll look at, you know, how people use our software and how much time they spend. So One of our KPIs is engagement as an indication of loyalty. And that is dependent upon the type of software and the type of customer that's using it and where they're consuming it. Because we have software that we bring to different ecosystems. So, for example, architects commonly use Autodesk, a tool called Revit, in order to do BIM modeling, right? So Autodesk is built in ecosystems. So we'll design software to work in that ecosystem, but we'll also design software to work for USG's online page and then also eventually mobile. So we'll measure engagement and use of the software as a KPI, but then we also look at what we refer to as certain high value actions, because ultimately you're going to want to tie a certain behavior and action actually ends up being a sale, because that's what this is really all about. You're trying to influence your customers, make their lives easier, make them more competitive, and solve really important pain points for them so that they stick to your products and they eventually purchase your products. So we have certain high value actions that we monitor for that we know will correlate to an eventual sale down the road. And so we'll use that as a KPI.
Okay. Awesome. So we've already got questions coming in the chat, but I have one for you just now. One last one, and then feel free to raise your hands, folks, if you want to be if you want to do the face to face. I'm doing the bunny ears with that. But so a lot of you might be thinking, this Sam guy looks really familiar. I remember hearing from him a while ago. It was during the pandemic, so it's unclear. So USG did a case study on digital transformation with IRI about 3 years ago. And Sam came on and did a thought leader interview and kind of talked through what he was working on back then. And I will share the case study when I send out the recording of this. So you guys can all go and check it out. But I just want to say, you know, it was 3 years ago. It's been a big 3 years. So much has changed. So, you know, kind of more generally, you know, how has your focus shifted? You know, because not like, oh, how have things changed in the last 3 years? Because that's, I'm not opening that kettle of fish. That's not happening. But so how has your focus shifted to, you know, how things are going now and looking forward since then? So where have the changes been? And Sam, we'll start with you on that one.
So I would say that a lot of the focus from 3 years to where we were to where we are now is based upon sort of those unanticipated lessons learned, things that we didn't anticipate when we started this journey, and so we wanted to make sure we spent a lot of time on that. And one of the things that we learned right away is there's a methodology in software development referred to as agile, that we didn't initially practice, but we've now incorporated agile development into what conventionally was a phase gate process that we evolved over time, working very closely with IRI. And the agile process, especially in the sort of the development phase of what we do, was absolutely necessary because there's a lot of similarities between physical innovation and digital innovation, but what is not similar is the speed and the advancement and how quickly things change. And so one of the things that we needed to do is learn lessons from others who live in this digital space. And one of those was agile. So we brought in some agile expertise in order for us to be able to test, validate, respond, and adapt and change to very quick changes with our customers' needs. And I think that's one of the big ones. Another thing that we did not anticipate was the amount of time that needed to be necessary to communicate the value of digital to our business customers who live in sort of the physical product world, right? Mm-hmm. We needed to take that up a notch, and we actually adapted our organization by putting in dedicated product sort of digital transformation people to interface and work with the business on a daily basis in order to make sure that the things that we were working on, that our business customer understood that, and that they were strategically aligned with the things that we were doing. And, you know, helping them understand how quickly things change. In the physical product world, we have sort of luxury because of built-in standards and codes that it takes multiple years before change comes about. In the digital world, it's a much different thing. So I would say the two big things are incorporating agile methodologies into our standard phase gate process, and putting more digital transformation leaders into our group to help sort of our businesses stay along with us as we're developing for them.
Awesome. Thanks. And Lou, how about you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so
you don't get to miss this one.
I don't get to miss this one, even though I wasn't presenting 3 years ago.
No, we still want to hear what's been going on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's a journey and it's an evolution. And I really do appreciate you actually using the term evolution at the very beginning of this discussion, because we are evolving not just the technologies, but the methodologies and the interactions, not just within the technology groups and manufacturing groups, but the overall organization. And so part of that evolution is the prioritization, making sure that this is meeting the needs with all the other priorities and that it's additive. So, for example, for sustainability, we have sustainability goals or 2030 sustainability goals. Energy reduction is a huge portion of sustainability goals. And so part of our task is to reduce energy, leveraging digital tools. And so combining those two together, we're a company that's been around since 1902. We have operations still in operation from actually before 1902. So you can imagine, you know, maybe you have a 40, 50 year old asset that needs to be replaced. And so now it's not just, okay, we're going to replace that asset. The question gets asked, what is the advancements that we have? So instead of spending X dollars to replace it, if we did a delta improvement of that asset, can we get a step closer to our overall roadmap and overall goals and where we're trying to get to? And then the other part of it, which is, I think, one of the questions that's coming up, which is, you know, the allocation of resourcing and where those resourcing is coming to basically support both the development and then the support of rollout of these digital transformations that we're having.
All right. So that's a nice segue. So first we'll do the question that's in the chat, and then we'll go to you, Pete, if that's okay, because we've got a hand raised. So since you've already started on that one, Lou, so the question is, for many of these initiatives, did you already have internal expertise? If not, did you, one, train internal SMEs to use AI ML tools, and or two, hire external AI ML expertise and train them on internal SME knowledge? What has worked best for USG?
Yep. So I'll go over a couple of specific examples. So 2015, 2016, we stood up advanced analytics in manufacturing. And part of that stand up is we identified some folks in the organization that had some statistical expertise and skill sets, and then actually kind of trained them up to be data scientists. But we partnered with a company to help us with the first several rounds of proof of concepts, to then also train up our own individuals along the way. And those individuals were subject matter experts they had a propensity for the skill sets necessary, but it's that last bit of training and polishing. But in order to get there faster, we decided that we were going to buy that and buy that through partnering with another company. Whenever we do any of these technology advancements, we look at, are we going to build it from scratch? Are we going to buy it? Are we going to buy it to build it? So buy it to understand it first and learn about it and then kind of build it yourselves later on. Are we going to, what I call rent to own, where you're going to, you know, lease or rent some software and some other things and later on come back and, you know, build up the organization. And other aspects, like for our machine vision, we decided that the fastest path for machine vision was to really go out and bring in an expert. So in that particular case, we brought in an expert, did a kind of a search within the country with somebody that's was headed in the same direction that we wanted to go to. And then we brought on our own folks within the organization, again, that had that kind of skill set and bent. Going back to the data science, we're about a 50-50 mix right now. We're about 50% where we hired off the street and about 50% that we brought up through the ranks. Machine vision right now, it's, you know, we brought the first one off the street and now we're actually bringing in from within the organization.
Okay. How about on your side, Sam?
So when the Center of Excellence came together, we did pull some, because there was initiatives going on in different groups within the company, we pulled some expertise from IT, from marketing and from CIC. The thinking to begin with was that we would always sort of start as a very lean group. And that we would run experiments and proof of concepts in development of our tools, and we would work with select partners to do that. And then sort of once they've proved out, then we would scale rapidly and bring in-source expertise up along with that. So for example, where we're at today, building our system, we work with an outside partner initially to begin it. But then slowly over the last few years, we've been bringing in, junior people to work with the system and learn and grow it over time. So it's sort of a hybrid. And then, you know, we invest in internalizing the expertise. Once it's successful and it's proving its value to our businesses, and our customers. It's a similar type of concept to what we would do in R&D, where, you know, we would do planning out, you know, 4 or 5 years ahead. We would look at key technologies, and then we would bring junior people in and have them sort of grow into the role. And we're taking a similar approach in the Center of Excellence.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Pete, can you unmute yourself and ask your question?
Sure. My question is related to this connected workforce idea. Yeah. And you mentioned a fixed HMI station. I was wondering, is this related to frontline workers? In other words, it's a move away from knowledge workers. If it is, then could you just talk about some of the principles you wrestled with to do that safely, right? People walking around plants with mobile devices, we don't want them walking into equipment. So what kind of principles did you guys have to work through? And the other element is, with it being kind of your primary workforce with fixed stations, typically we use shared accounts. Yep. So how did you wrestle through the principles of feasibility, right? You can't license everybody. Your IT budget will go through the roof. Yeah. So what are the two principles around safety and kind of feasibility as you try to pull off this connected workforce?
Yep. So let's first start with safety. So part of it is we actually have some of these tablets on our forklifts because we have a forklift operator that's actually controlling equipment too. And we interlock that device so that when it's in movement, it shuts off so that you don't have, that connectivity, and distractions, I think is where you were heading at, with that one as well. And hopefully this will be a dialogue. So, if you want to go a little bit further, we can go further on that one, as well. As far as like the licensing and the like, we actually did a lot of due diligence and found kind of an industrial Internet of Things, disruptor, software package type system that's allowed us to actually decrease our licensing fees and with unlimited access, of our operators or people that get access to it. So it actually ended up being kind of a huge win-win for us, Pete. Did that answer your question or do you have?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah. On the safety idea, the thing was, you know, you go from fixed stations. We don't have enough computers today.
Yep.
Right. If everybody's going to have something, what are the input devices? Do you start using personal smartphones? Those can cause problems too, as well, in a manufacturing setting. So do you sit there and say only fixed devices, or okay, if you're going to use your personal smartphone, that's okay to do. You got labor laws, all those things you have to think through. And, and then do you really want somebody looking at their smartphone while they're walking through a plant? Right. Those kind of principles, right?
Yep.
Did you guys have to touch on some of that stuff as you're working through this?
Yeah, we do, and we did, and it's continuing to evolve. So we actually have, we don't have personal devices. We actually use tablets or industrial type tablets. And part of that too is then in the shift transitions, when you transition from shift to shift, part of that transition is the tablet. We actually run those off of our wireless networks within the facility. So if you took that tablet somewhere else, let's say for some reason it left the facility and didn't have a proper transition, you wouldn't have access to the facility, right? Because there's always that safety concern of, hey, am I having somebody have access to my facility? So we actually do that within the our own wireless network itself, and it doesn't work anywhere else. On the kind of the mobility of it, it's kind of more of a practice application. You don't want somebody walking looking at their tablet in this particular case. And so, yeah, we do have rules set up. We actually have been talking through this is, can we leverage some kind of machine vision type things as well and not look like Big Brother, but be able to use it to identify as somebody walking and actually looking at a tablet. But Pete, honestly, we haven't been able to leverage those types of things other than to have practice rules based, but then also we have a philosophy here on safety of I'm responsible for my safety, but I'm responsible for the others that are around me as well. And we have an open atmosphere so that if somebody sees something doing something that's not safe, we actually encourage them to talk to each other. It's kind of an encouragement. So that's what we've done so far.
Yeah, those are the principles I was kind of hoping to, that you would start touching on. I mean, I would imagine it's not unique to you or other manufacturers, but this is our largest growing audience of IT is the frontline workers. Yep. And I think everybody's struggling with it. You can't turn everybody on at once, nor do I think you would. I think you would have a big safety issue if you turned it on too fast.
Right.
So how do you train the culture? How do you keep the safety and make sure it's fit for purpose? And how do you lock it down? Right. You don't want somebody looking at TikTok in the manufacturing office either. Right.
Yeah. So again, we limit, you know, through our IT partners, we have a really good relationship with OT and IT. Something that we've established for many years. Sometimes you have this conflict for some reason, and I've talked to other folks in other organizations, we actually work really, really well together between IT and OT. And we brought the IT in at the very beginning, and those were the types of things that we talked through at the very beginning, and then did proof of concepts and some validations to work through those things, Pete.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right, we have time for just one more quick question, and Sadia Khalil has raised their hand. So if you want to come on and ask your question, Sadia.
Sure, thank you. So we talk about, you said digital transformation, building the products or services for your customers. What about change management? What measures you have done with your customers in order to actually sell your products or let them adapt it?
So change management has not been as difficult of a proposition for us, especially in the digital world. Our customers have been asking us, for example, digital assets and tools in a lot of areas. So there, a lot of times our customers are ahead of us. So we haven't had to do much of that. I think the biggest focus for digital transformation has been actually internally with our businesses and trying to help them understand how digital tools will help them scale. And I can actually give you an example of that. One of the pain points for our customers is acoustics and understanding how acoustics impacts the built space. We provide a lot of complex data. And if you're an architect or a designer and you're going through iterations of your design, it's difficult to understand how those design choices impact the acoustics of the space. And so what we had done historically is our sales team would spend a significant amount of time going out into the field, and we would run education seminars to teach our customers how their design choices change acoustics of the space. And what we've done recently now is we've been able to create a digital tool that we've put online that 24/7 will allow our customers anywhere in the world to access the tool and walk around common commercial spaces, change USG products within those spaces, and hear exactly how it impacts the reverb time or the sound absorption. And so trying to convey the value that of that to our business customers, it was essentially saying, you know, prior to having this type of digital technology available 24/7, our sales team would spend a half hour to an hour, maybe 200 sessions every 6 months. And now with this tool online, we've been able to reach thousands of customers within a couple months. So articulating the scale and the power of digital tools to our internal business customers so that they can understand it, we've been spending a lot of focus there. Trying to explain to an architect, hey, here's a tool for you, and you can click on it whenever you want and use it whenever you want. There was like nothing that we had to do in terms of teaching that was coming. So I guess to answer your question, digital transformation for us and from our customers, it's been a lot of pull. They're more than happy to tell us about their pain points and their struggles to get, you know, real-time information in terms of pricing or where our products were or how our products go to.
Yeah, thank you. I guess my question was particular, but to energy reduction and sustainability, we were talking about that. So, I mean,
okay.
Yeah, that is a big change in the world. Anyway, I don't want to take more of the time. You can go ahead with the next question. Thank you, Lee.
We can certainly follow up afterwards too, because sustainability is a specific area that we are developing things for, and I can certainly speak to that.
Thanks.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to actually end it there. We've made it the whole hour. I know we have additional questions. Aaron, I think your question about where digital transformation sits could be answered in the case study, which I'll be sending out after the call here. So my apologies. But huge thank you, Sam, Lou. It's been fantastic. It's so wonderful to hear all the stuff that you all are doing and to get caught up after a crazy 3 years. And I hope I can catch back up with you in another 3 years and hear all the stuff that's going on then too. Again, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. And thanks, everyone. We'll see you next month. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.